Welcome to Doctors of the Baobab. On this podcast, we go beyond the white coat, where we get to know the doctors that we admire and respect. Join us as we explore the stories behind the white coat, uncovering the humanity behind the medical expertise. Whether it's navigating the complexities of patient care, overcoming personal obstacles, or advocating for change in healthcare systems, each episode promises to inspire, to educate, and to uplift. So sit back, relax, and prepare to embark on a journey of discovery with Doctors of the Baobab. So today we are introducing Dr. Shongi Mabaso, distinguished physician, doctor, and a pharmaceutical executive with a multifaceted background at the intersection of medicine, business, and community health. She's a graduate of the prestigious University of KwaZulu-Natal, and I'm proud to say there's also my alma mater. Dr. Shongi has seamlessly blended her medical expertise with an MBA to carve out an illustrious career path. She currently serves as the medical director for a leading pharmaceutical company, where she has garnered widespread recognition for exceptional contributions to healthcare. Her visionary leadership and unwavering commitment to patient well-being has been underscored by a string of accolades, including 2 Vice President Awards for pioneering patient support and adherence strategies. And under her guidance, her team achieved the highest adherence rates globally, setting a benchmark for patient care excellence. Dr. Shongi's passion for innovation and improving health outcomes is exemplified by her receipt of the President's Award for an initiative that significantly enhanced outcomes for inflammatory bowel disease patients. Throughout her career, she has dedicated herself to fostering healthier communities, spearheading initiatives aimed at addressing critical healthcare needs. Here's an example of that. In response to the COVID-19 pandemic, Dr. Shongi took proactive measures to safeguard public health by initiating a groundbreaking free screening program which reached more than 10 million individuals in South Africa. Her tireless efforts in this regard have been instrumental in mitigating the spread of the virus and, more importantly, saving lives. Dr. Shongi embodies the epitome of a modern healthcare leader, seamlessly integrating her medical expertise, business acumen, and a profound commitment to community welfare. Her innovative approaches and transformative initiatives continue to shape the landscape of healthcare, leaving an indelible mark on the industry and the lives of countless individuals worldwide. Dr. Shongi Mabaso, thank you so much for joining us today on Doctors of the Baobab, and welcome.
Thank you for inviting me and for having me here.
Great. So I usually start off by making a disclaimer, where I have a disclaimer to make. And my disclaimer is that I have known you since we were both in our teenage years at the same medical school. And it's really interesting to me because you realize how much time flies. It's almost 20 or more than 20 years since we were at medical school. But what is really fascinating is now looking back and especially reflecting on your career as somebody that we have had so many touch points over the past 20 years and seeing with awe and with inspiration, the growth that you have made, not only in your personal life, but also in your professional life. So I really want to share with the audience the remarkable journey that you have had over the past 20 years. But this is not about our relationship. This is about you. And so always a good place to start, as I say on this podcast, is right at the beginning. Let's go beyond the 20 years. Just go back a little bit further to your background. How did you even get to a point where you decided you wanted to become a doctor? What drove you to that point?
Yeah. Thank you so much for that question. So I'm a Pretoria girl, and those who come from Pretoria will understand the significance of being a Pretoria girl. I come from Atteridgeville, Paarlie, a typical, South African township. And as you say, it's more than 20 years ago. So I was born at a time where things were difficult, still born under apartheid, and things were not like our futures were not that bright, with all the segregation. So anyway, I grew up in a township, but I think for me, the moments which I would say were pivotal moments that changed my trajectory was firstly, my mom was a teacher. So by her being a teacher, she understood the importance of education. And she always encouraged us to strive to do well in school. And secondly, I found a way to, I got myself into this program, which was for like kids, small kids who were good in math and science. And there was this non-governmental organization that used to sponsor us to do extra math and science. So every Saturday, we would get on a bus and go to Waterkloof, at a school there in Waterkloof, where we would do like extra math and science. And in leaving the township, I saw a bigger picture. And I think that actually is something that defines my life a lot because I'm always striving for the next bigger thing. So I saw a bigger picture and I saw these houses in Waterkloof and I saw how people lived and I was like, wow, this is something that's possible, right? Because if you're not exposed, if you just live all your life in the township and you're not exposed to what's out there, you don't know. So I think that planted a seed in me to want to do something more. So I think this is where I started to strive, did well in school, and I also wanted to help people. I wanted to have an opportunity to impact people in a positive way. And my dad used to work at Kalafong Hospital as an administrator. And so when I was in matric, he actually took me to the hospital for like a stay for a day kind of thing and got me to spend time with the occupational therapist, learning about that because he thought, you know what, that would be an opportunity. But I don't think at that time they thought, I'll be able to be a doctor. Like that was just too beyond. It was beyond what my parents could dream. It was beyond what I could dream. But, lo and behold, the way things happened, I was able to get really good marks when I finished my matric. I was able to graduate top of the class. I had very good high marks from in terms of our region. And as you know, most of the time when you have great marks at that time, when we grew up, it's like, oh, you should be a doctor. And so I think all that culminated in me going to medical school.
Did the community work that you're currently doing, or let me say the community focus that you currently have, did that start at medical school? Can you tell me a little bit about your experience at medical school and whether this notion of Ubuntu, how did it start and how did it find expression when you were at medical school, if at all?
So I think at medical school, obviously, when you start to interact with patients, I'm very interested in people, like, more, not just about the disease they have, but their stories and the stories behind them. And I think for me, one of the things that is still true even this day is that I'm super interested in women. When I was in medical school, I think my obs and gynae rotations were the ones that I enjoyed the most. And also post graduation, when I was an MO, I spent a lot of time in obs and gynae because I have a very keen interest in women's health, and how women interact with the health system. Because I do believe that, women have a lot of challenges that in general, in terms of, in their life, which can also be expressed in how they seek health and, the kind of health support that they go for. So I've always been super interested in women. And that's why even today I'm very keen on uplifting women, supporting women, and just seeing how we can help women move forward. Because I do believe that by helping women move forward, we help the whole nation move forward.
And I don't want to lose the thread around leadership as women, and particularly leadership as Black women and leadership as African women, right? I'm going to go back to medical school, but I want to focus on this for a little bit because I think it's something that comes up a lot, even in coaching practice. How do we navigate the especially the corporate world as women leaders and as Black women leaders and Africans? What have been the learnings for you over time in situations where you found yourself as the only woman in the room or the only Black woman in the room? How have you navigated those situations? What can you share with the audience about that?
Yeah. So I think of course I've been the only, but I never want to be the only, and that's why I always want to lift people to be there in the room with me. And you know, the difficulties of being the only is what I found is like carrying the. It's almost like you carry the whole nation, right? Because if you're the only Black woman in the room, it's like you are representing all Black women in the room. And I mean, we're not all the same, right? So you have that. There sometimes people have stereotypes that they put you in a certain box, and they want you to stay in that box. So I think in my career, I've had positive, not so positive experiences, but I've always over-indexed on the positive experiences and trying to see how I can learn. And one of the things for me is that our upbringing and our context, they affect us so much in terms of, so I'll give you an example. You know that in the African culture, generally, I think, and it's not just African culture because I've had the privilege of working with different people from different countries now, you know, so I work with people from Japan, China, I mean, all over the world, I work with people there. And I've seen some similarities in some of the cultural aspects, right? We are encouraged to, so don't speak unless you're spoken to, kind of thing, you know, you should only speak if you're spoken to. And like almost like keep your space, right? But in corporate, if you don't speak, so if you show up to a meeting and you don't say anything, then people come to the conclusion that you're probably not smart, or you're probably not contributing, or maybe you are not engaged, or whatever conclusion people come to, which will probably be a negative conclusion, right? So you have to really challenge yourself to get out of that mentality of how we've been raised, you know, by raising your hand and speaking up and saying what you think, you know, so that you can also contribute. And if you have thoughts, your thoughts will be good. And most of the time, I think we hold back on the thoughts. You know, when you find yourself as the only Black African woman in a room full of other people, you think that they're smarter than you. You think that they had better education than you. You think that they probably have better ideas than you. But in time, I've learned that we also have ideas that are worth sharing. So it's important, you know, sometimes for us to speak up and to give our ideas. In the beginning, it's hard. In the beginning, you're doing it and your heart is pounding and your mouth is dry and you can hardly get the words out. But by practicing more and more and being super intentional about it, you get better at it and you get more comfortable in doing it. And this is just one example. And it will also, other things is about making sure that, you know, you let people know what you're doing. Because I think sometimes we're not very good at letting people know the contribution that we're making. Somebody said, I was on a panel with a discussion with other ladies, and she said that the mouth, the closed mouth doesn't get fed. You know, so if you don't speak up, if you don't say if you need support, if you don't say what you're doing, you end up not getting the support that you need for you to be able to thrive and to be excellent, because you're just not speaking up. So, and that's also cultural, right? That's how we've been raised. But it's to get out of that mentality and just speak up. And, you know, if you need support to do something, if you don't really understand what's going on, understand, you know, speak to leaders. Like you're saying about networking, when you're in a meeting and, you know, there's leaders, sometimes we feel shy. We don't want to speak up. You don't want to take space, you know, so just take up the space.
Yeah. So, so important what you're saying regarding having also the confidence and building the confidence within yourself. And a big part of that is also understanding who you are, having the self-awareness, honing your craft. Of course, you have to make sure that you, you know, your work, you know, you, as young people say, that you stand on your business. And I'm really also grateful for you mentioning that it's a time, you know, it takes time sometimes to build yourself up to that point. Of course, some people do it very naturally, but something that a lot of doctors struggle with is imposter syndrome, you know, just being in a leadership position and doubting yourself, you know. And from what you're saying, that is sometimes the limitation that that people might have. You are in this role, but you're not so sure of yourself. Do I really belong here? What will people say if I speak up? So so very insightful comments that that you have made. Was it also your experience that you had mentors to guide you through this? Because this is something that, and I will say from my personal experience, you know, everything that you've said, I also learned through the input from mentors and at a point even from a coach. Can you you share with us your thoughts around mentorship for women's leadership?
Absolutely. Mentorship is critical. It's a critical component of how we develop, is to have those mentors who are going to really build you up. So I've had many mentors in my career, and I've had both, you know, what they call formal mentors and informal mentors, you know. So informal mentors could be anyone that you admire or someone who's done something that you also want to do. And you could just reach out to them and say, you know, could we have coffee? Could we have, you know, have a discussion around that? And they informally give you information and advice. And informal mentors could be in a workplace situation where I think, you know, in medicine, even though we don't call it that, but, you know, when you're an intern or your medical officer, you always have the registrars who are there. So I think the registrars are probably mentors without them knowing. And I think if you get a good one, right, somebody who's interested in your development and who wants to build you, they can really, you can really have a great mentorship with them. So it's about learning and leaning on your mentors. But mentorship is something that is mentee driven. So I think you as the mentee has to be the one who drives the relationship, has to be the one who reaches out and asks for the appointments, asks the questions, coming prepared with specific questions and specific challenges that you have and sharing. So I've had many, many mentors in my career. I've been very lucky because a lot of my mentors have been really, really great mentors. And I think mentorship for me is about having that space that is a safe space to be vulnerable, right? Because sometimes we feel like you have to be strong, put up a facade, I suppose. And we know that we all have challenges. We all know that in our roles, we all have challenges. So having a mentor that you can go to and say, hey, I had this specific interaction. Maybe it wasn't such a positive interaction. Can you help me speak through it and, you know, advise me as to how I could have done better? It's a good opportunity for that. And mentors also share their journey and they share what they've learned so that you don't have to repeat the same mistakes. So you learn from them. So I really, really encourage people to have mentors, and I encourage especially women to have mentors because sometimes it's not easy for women to access that mentorship. Because, you know, especially if you're in a corporate, you know, the senior leaders might feel like they're out of reach for you. But, you know, reach out and see if they have time to mentor you. And I also encourage people to have multiple mentors. Don't just have one. Have multiple mentors. Have different people in your workplace, outside the workplace, formal mentors, informal mentors, mentors that look like you and mentors that don't look like you. Because I think from that you'll learn a lot.
Yes, exactly. Just like I learned from you when I reached out to you many years ago and had a cup of coffee and said, Dr. Shoghi, I'm really curious about the pharmaceutical industry. And that was the start of my discussions with you over time around being in the pharmaceutical industry. So I know you are sharing our story now to the audience, but I'm sure you've also done it for many other people. And as you've said, it's something that really works. And grateful also that being in this medical community, I still feel very strongly that doctors generally support each other around that. If you reach out to any doctor, chances are that they will be more than willing to assist you. So now, something that I also know about you when we talk about women leadership is that you are a very dedicated mother. I have seen you with your children, and I've often asked myself, how does she balance this very senior, demanding role of being a medical executive in a high pressure industry in the pharmaceutical sector, with motherhood? How do you do that? This is something that a lot of women often think about or even worry about, even they haven't started, and exclude themselves from opportunities because they think it will take them away from their families and from their children. Yes. What are your strategies around this so-called work-life balance?
Yes, work-life balance comes up a lot. And I always say, I call it work-life integration. So how to find a way to integrate your work and your life so that you have, like, you know, a seamless integration of that. And by what I mean by that is that, you know, I think maybe in the past there was a whole notion of you work from 8 to 5 and then at 5 you go home and you become a mom, and then tomorrow at 8 you go. But these days, I see there's more of an integration between our work and our life, right? And how you make it work is that there's moments. Well, firstly, I'm gonna say one thing, which I live by, is that I feel like in this life we've got balls in the air. So you're juggling balls in the air. You know, it's a constant juggling of balls in the air. But some of those balls are glass. And the glass balls for me are the family and the girls. Some balls you can let fall and they will bounce right back because they're rubber balls. But some balls, if you let them fall, they're going to break. So I think it's very important for us at some point in our children's lives to be there for them. But it's not about quantity, it's more about quality. So, but what I mean is that you don't have to be there all the time, but when you're there, you should be fully focused and dedicated. So that's what I do, is that when I'm at home with the girls and, you know, we go on adventures, we do things and we're fully dedicated. And when I'm at work, I'm fully dedicated through work. But I also find a way to integrate it. So obviously our work involves a lot of travel, and sometimes there might be times when I'm traveling and, you know, I'm not around. So I'll be traveling and I'll be out, and that time would be for work. But when I do come back from my travels, I would go and watch a hockey match, you know, make sure that I'm there. I will take them swimming if they need to go swimming, making sure that I'm dropping them off at school in the morning, you know, things like that, so that when I am around, it becomes quality more than quantity. But I mean, the advice I would give is that, find your rhythm and find what works for you, because it's not what will work for me won't work for you. And completely need a support system. We can't do this alone. We're not superwomen. You need to have a support system. So the support system could look like a partner or a spouse, could look like you know, your family, your mom, aunts. It could be aunts that we make for ourselves, you know, your friends, and your friends that you choose to be able to be the support system for you. You know, if you can't be in a hockey match, maybe auntie Soko can be there, you know. So build that support system around yourself so that you don't do this all by yourself. It's really helpful.
Is there anything you want to add for yourself, or?
I mean, for me, I think it's, you know, as doctors, to think that there's more than one path I think that's important. There isn't just one single path. There's non-traditional careers, which I consider the one that I have, a non-traditional career. I've had my mom ask me, what do you do, actually? And now she really understands what I do. But explore the non-traditional careers, because I do think that the non-traditional careers give an opportunity for us as doctors to impact in a different manner, to be able to impact health systems, to be able to impact innovation, to bring solutions for patients in a different way. So, you know, I think in the past, people didn't really explore those non-traditional careers, especially in South Africa. So exploring those non-traditional careers, I think that's what I would encourage doctors to do.
Great. Thank you so much for that suggestion, Dr. Shongi. And with that, that brings us to the end of our conversation. I'm sure we will meet again, since we are now both in the same country, over another cup of coffee just to touch base. But to thank you again for your pearls of wisdom. Dr. Shongi Mabaso, pharmaceutical executive and medical doctor. And that wraps up another insightful episode of Doctors of the Baobab. I hope you found today's discussion both enlightening and empowering. But before we part ways, I want to extend a heartfelt invitation to all our listeners and viewers. If you're a medical doctor and you've been inspired by what you've heard today, you're ready to take action towards a positive change in your life, you can consider working with me, your host, Dr. Nondumiso Makunga Stevenson, as your personal life coach. You can email me at wundidoctorcoaching@gmail.com to learn more about my coaching services and how we can embark on a transformative journey together, where we can navigate the challenges, uncover your strengths, and also unlock your fullest potential. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode that is filled with valuable insights and strategies for personal growth. Sharing is caring, so if you know someone who can also benefit from our discussions, be sure to spread the word and also encourage them to tune in. And you can also stay connected beyond the podcast. Follow us on social media, on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Join the conversation, comment on the discussions, share your thoughts, and connect also with like-minded individuals who are also on a path on their journey towards living their best lives. Thank you for tuning in today. Remember, every small step you take towards this goal is a victory worth celebrating. Until next time, keep striving, keep growing, and keep shining the light. Doctors of the Baobab, where medicine meets motivation.